So since the changes in the definition of matter of public concern affect both the right of free speech and the right of association, let's talk about that next. Practitioners had really become accustomed to the old multi-part definition of matter of public concern. The Supreme Court had given us some guidance in Wisenhunt and in ExxonMobil versus Coleman, even though some of the courts of appeals resisted that guidance to some degree or another about what was a matter of public concern. So what does this new language do, and where did it come from? Amanda, let's start with you.
Sure. Well, here too, we have what I categorize as two types of changes. The first one is that they changed the nexus, I guess you could say. It used to say that a matter of public concern includes an issue related to, and now it says a matter of public concern means a statement or activity regarding. I don't know if that's more narrow or more broad, but it is a change, and so again, it will create questions and lawsuits about what it means. The bigger change here too, we see a subject matter restriction. Probably, we used to have a list of five topics, and in my opinion, they were not things that people would traditionally think, oh, this is a matter of public concern. It found its way to business disputes about economic well-being and products in the marketplace that, of course, can relate to a matter of public concern, depending on what the dispute is or the product is. But they're not things that I think most everyday people on the street would read and think, oh, that's a matter of public concern. Now, under the 2019 version, we have a list of three things, not five, and they are more traditionally related to what average people would think of as matters of public concern. So we've got things about public officials and figures, matters of political, social, or community interest, and subject matters of concern to the public. Of course, that's very broad, and there will be arguments made to try to encompass all types of topics. But the biggest change is that they have narrowed the list from five to three, and tied it really to something that has to relate to public interest. And in terms of where it came from, I think this language comes from a U.S. Supreme Court decision, Snyder versus Phelps. And so you might look to that line of authority for more explanation of the meaning of the terms.
Please, Judge. We had an interesting discussion about this yesterday.
By the way, this is kind of like the way we just have conversations socially, the three of us. We always
really, but, if you want to hang out with us, it's probably fun.
We probably need the interaction with others. But I just observed that in determining what this new matter of public concern definition means, we're back to what always is the issue with the TCPA. We know that the overarching purpose per 2702 is ultimately to vindicate constitutional expressive rights against non-meritorious litigation. And the question is, to what degree do the procedural mechanisms, which courts also have to follow, incorporate, refer to, are informed by the First Amendment concepts that lurk in the background? And this is going to be an area where the battle lines will essentially be, as Amanda suggested, are there terms here that are loaded, have acquired a technical, narrower meaning, and based in First Amendment jurisprudence? Terms like community, public, those have First Amendment import. Or are we talking in the vernacular, which has often been the case as this law has been construed? I mean, that can have big impact. For example, in sub B, a matter of political, social, or other interest to the community. Well, if community is just some group of people, and gosh, what would be the limits on other? I mean, prurient interest? I mean, what do we have? If you're in the vernacular. So this may, I guess, long story short, it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out and may keep a lot of you in the room pretty busy.
Yeah, the GTLA keeps on giving. you can see the field day of interpretive challenges that may confront the court in the coming months under the Act.
And Tom, I just add, I don't take anything we say about the act. You know, it's a brand new law. It is necessarily criticism. As someone who spent 15 years sweating over whether a clause in a 35-page opinion might breed 5 years of litigation, nobody seemed coming. The legislation too is a product of competing interests, as you'll see bits and pieces that reflect, say, interests of media, interests of other groups out there, and the sausage gets made, and that's just kind of how our process works. So, yeah, don't take it as we're ragging on the legislature or anything.
Right,
they have a hard job.
Great point. As you already mentioned, the right to petition was not amended. That definition was not amended. I think the couple of important things about the right to petition for practitioners are, if you're asserting the right to petition as the basis for your anti-SLAPP motion, please allege the catch-all, because it's been construed more broadly than the other parts of the statute. So that's just one tip. Let's skip ahead to legal action. This has been another fertile ground for interpretive disputes among the courts of appeals. Amanda, why don't you start and tell us about the changes the legislature made in this definition?